welcome and thank you for coming out on this wonderful day. You know, that obviously it's more made to be outside than inside. And it's great to have a Greek event. We can actually start on time. We don't have to wait another 5 to 10 minutes for more people to show up. So thank you for coming. And it's a great pleasure to introduce Marko Živković, a professor of anthropology from University of Alberta, who has his PhD from University of Chicago and has been teaching at Reed College as well. And something that we share is that we are both graduates of the University of Belgrade's clinical psychology department, and then we both went in different directions. You know, he in a, let's say, a little more scientific one in anthropology, you know, so to speak, and then we into cultural studies, literature, and language. But his work has mainly been focused on the area of, you know, Southeastern Europe, the former Yugoslavia, East Central Europe in general. You know, he just has a book that's been submitted to Cornell University Press called Serbian Storybook, about the ways in which, you know, the nation of the Serbs narrativizes its knowledge of itself, let's say. And his project currently that is just being in its kind of initial stages that he's going to present to us has to do with the culture of gerrymandering, or, you know, no, how do you say, gerry-rigging, right?
Gerry-rigging.
you know, or buđenje, as we say in Serbian, you know, it's the way in which people relate to things, especially cars, in order to personalize them and make them fit some of their own dreams. He has also been teaching, you know, courses like anthropology of dreams, which are, you know, quite interesting. So thank you very much for coming, and please welcome Marko.
Thank you. Okay, the inspiration for this paper in its initial version came from a very sad occasion, the passing away of a dear friend and colleague, Daphne Birtle, in 2007. A group of us organized the panel at the American Anthropological Association meetings last year in her honor, and I wanted to do something that will be a kind of continuation of sorts of the kind of work that she has done. She worked on East Germany and German reunification, and Trabi, the little Trabant car, featured as an icon or an emblem or a synecdoche, to be technical, for a whole range of processes that she was interested in. And she wrote this beautiful paper about Trabi that I heard first in 1999 at the AAA meetings, and it remained with me as a beautiful example of how much ethnographic mileage one can get out of little cars. So what I tried to do last year at that meeting was to follow her example and try to get some mileage out of Trabi's little Yugoslav brother. A Serbian version of Italian Fiat 600D. This is not it. I will explain what this is, nicknamed Fiča. I started photographing Trabi on the streets of Belgrade and collecting the Trabi folklore after Daphne's account enchanted this little car for me. And the last photos I sent to her were of this Trabi that was made into an extended limo, wedding limo, that adorns the main square of Emir Kusturica's wooden city of Trvengrad in Zlatibor in Serbia. My favorites, however, are a series of photos I took in Belgrade in the fall of 2003 of a rundown abandoned Trabi side by side with the equally dilapidated feature. So here he is. In 2003, an abandoned feature triggered just a whiff of nostalgia in me. But there was a moment much earlier that I remember very well when I experienced something much stronger, a stronger emotion that was provoked by the little car. It was sometime early in the Yugoslav wars of 1990s. It's past history for me, but it's kind of quite recent for you, but for me, it's quite recent. I was watching a TV report from one of the then destroyed cities. I think it was Vukovar, and the camera briefly passed over a completely destroyed, burnt-out feature. And by then, I have seen plenty of devastation of the war. But it was when I saw this destroyed feature that I felt the lump in my throat for the first time. I don't think that I actually cried, but I remember that this sight of a destroyed feature hit me much harder than any images of dead humans or burned down buildings. So then, you know, my question is, why, how can that be? And I have various ideas. Perhaps it's partly because the cars, we animate cars just like animals, and we tend to see in them a kind of innocence that we humans lost. And one of the Yugoslav bards, Đorđe Balašević, summarized it well in a ballad called The Warrior of the Peasant Heart, where he talks about a peasant who comes from the First World War and talks to kids on the street, and he's saying, I was not sorry for the people, all the villages, I was sorry for the horses. And my other example is from Monsignor Quixote, a humble village priest in Graham Greene's beautiful novel by the same title, who agonizes over his Rosinante. And that's the Spanish version of Ficha, the exact same car. That's his car. He calls it Rosinante. The novel actually opens with his worries over how to provide for Rosinante after his death. He treats the little car with touching tenderness and even engages a bishop in a theological discussion over whether one can pray for the happiness of animals, since he obviously feels an urge to pray for his Rosinante. But I think this is only a part of it. On the other hand, Ficha must have condensed for me a way of life in the process of being destroyed better than any human person could. So a way to pose the question of how a small car like Ficha could carry such a big load, the question that animated Daphne's Traby paper, is to ask, how does an object like this get imbued with such powers to evoke strong emotion? So this is what I want to pursue here. Trace out some of the ways that Ficha's career as a social object made it accumulate the kind of could be called intertextual thickness or figurative density, that's all technical vocabulary, that endowed it with such efficacy. So the basic idea here is to see what a car like this is good to think with. This comes from Levi-Strauss. This is what anthropologists love to do. To see how objects actually can tell us a lot about social life. And anthropologists have developed quite an expertise on strange properties objects acquire in the course of their social lives. After all, as a discipline, we started with fetishism and animism, the kinds of beliefs that the exotic others had. And then we learned a lot about the strange properties of gifts. And then recently we started talking about the social agency of things. I'm also invited to present about cars in a panel, another panel, which will be about metaphor as vehicle and vehicle as metaphor. It will be about boats and canoes and cars and airplanes. So let me just show you a few things that I figured little cars are good to think with. And I hope that you will then be inspired to think about other kinds of mileage that could be gotten out of little cars or big cars or vehicles. So I will first position Ficha in the Yugoslav car system and will then explore it as a family time binder, a peg in social frameworks of memory and a link in the economies of favor. I will finally analyze a keyword that I translate as jury rigging and try to show how Ficha, as a canonical object of jury rigging, works as a trope for a jury rigged social universe, and how, by lovingly restoring it to its factory condition, this jury-riggedness could be ritually undone. So, just as in this photo, Trabi was indeed close to Fija in the ex-Yugoslav car system. It was a part of the inner circle of Eastern Bloc-produced cars and thus felt as closer, more intimate than the outer circle of cars produced in Western Europe, the U.S., or Japan. So I basically, when thinking of the Yugoslav car universe, especially when I was growing up, I saw it as concentric circles where you had the most foreign cars, let's say Japanese and American at the outer ring, and then European ones, the Western ones in a closer ring, and then East European ones in a yet closer one. Now, about 10% of Yugoslav population worked abroad in Germany, Switzerland, Italy, France, and other Western countries since 1960s. So there was always plenty of mostly used West European cars on the streets. Most familiar were probably German, so we had Volkswagen Bugs and Passats and Sciroccos and Audi and BMWs and Mercedeses. And then the French Renault and Citroën and Peugeot and Italian Alfa Romeos and Lancias and Swedish Volvos and Saabs and British Austins, Mini Morrises. This is, you know, a litany of, like, cars that I remember from my childhood. Sunbeams, Rovers, Land Rovers. There were even Mazdas and Hondas. Opel was always big, and the European-produced Ford. In short, this was a much more varied car universe than in most of the Eastern Bloc. Now, in the inner circle of familiarity were the cars that were produced in Yugoslavia. And at various points of time, Volkswagen Golfs were produced, assembled in Sarajevo, Citroëns and Renault in Slovenia, Opels in Vojvodina. But there was a Zastava factory in Kragujevac, as that you know, because they produced the Yugo, of which you probably know at least one joke. I may tell some if we come to that. But it was this Zastava factory that, despite relying on the Fiat license, was in a different position because it was the only factory that actually made the cars rather than just assembled them. And Fiat, these Fiats were actually slightly different from the Italian originals, and they also had domestic names. So these Zastava cars actually belonged to the innermost circle. Now, Fija was at the very center of this innermost circle. There was no car that ever felt more ours than Fija. It was the first of the domestically produced cars. And this pride in the socialist production success with Fija was at its freshest. It was, moreover, the first car to become affordable for a relatively large segment of the population, and that made it truly a people's car. It was small and hardy, easy to take apart and maintain, and it could pull astounding loads. Like this. Fija soon inhibited the movies and the film news, and it became the mainstay of the so-called national class category in racing that started producing its own popular heroes. Finally, just as with Trabi, there is a movie about Trabi that made it kind of really famous. So just like that, Fija achieved a kind of apotheosis in one of the most cult of the cult Yugoslav movies, The National Class. This is the movie that was looping as you were walking in. The National Class, produced in 1979. So much more could be said about that. There is all kind of folklore about Fija. Now, Fija stories are very easy to elicit when you're in Serbia because pretty much anyone who is older than 20 had Fija in one way or another in their lives. If nothing else, most driving schools featured Fijas up until, I guess, late 1980s. So whoever got their license by the sort of late 1980s must have driven a Fija, and you had to take at least 40 obligatory lessons. And that's how I got my license. This is my connection to Fija. Now, as I was working on this paper, I discovered that there is something called the Association of Fiča Fans or Fiča Lovers, Udruženje ljubitelja Fiče, that was appropriately named after the movie National Class. And they had an internet forum. The association was established in 2002, and while the actual club boasts about 18 members, the forum has 585 registered members all over Yugoslavia. And on my visit to Belgrade in 2008, I even managed to attend one of the Fičiads, that's what they call a Fičiada, in the Serbian town of Šabac. Let me see. Okay, so here is a photo from the Fičiad in Šabac. It turned out that this forum was a gold mine of precisely the kind of information that I was looking for in the stories. So in 2007, one member asked on the forum what Fiča means to you, and people responded enthusiastically, and now we have something like 5 pages of text. So for one, Fiča is very often explicitly referred to as a living being. And so I'm quoting now. For me, the little blue one is alive. I imagine her and understand her as a living being who is a member of the family. I know exactly when something bothers her, when she's not feeling well. I grew up with her. Even my dad drove me up and down the street in her as a baby so I would fall asleep. I'm listening to the stories about her my whole life. My little blue one is a part of the family, and whatever happens to her, I will not renounce her, not even if she stayed broken and rotted in whatever shape in the garage. I simply love her, and no other Fiča will ever replace her. A footnote here, for me, Fiča is definitely masculine, is a he, but a lot of people also refer to it as she. This is a thorny linguistic problem that we can go into if you're interested in. So here it is. Fiča is a living being. It's a family member. And finally, you have this motif that crops up again and again of being put to sleep as a baby by being driven up and down the street. So this is the image for you of the ultimate intimacy. Fiča is a cradle and the nurse, and its engine's sound and characteristic vibrations as a lullaby. Now, it's as often the grandparents as the parents who are the first to have the Fiča in the family. And the present owners, whether they are teenagers or 40-year-olds, if they happen to inherit the original one, often do this after a kind of gap. The family Fiča often survives some sort of dormancy and neglect before being resurrected. They stopped making them in 1984, I think. Those who have the original ones are often fiercely proud of the fact and swear that they would never renounce it. Now, if the Fiča that is now driven is an original one, is not the original one, still the first family Fiča tends to be remembered with special affection. This is one of my favorites. This is such a typical scene in a small street in Belgrade. There is a strong sense in these accounts that Fiča threads itself through one's family's history. And this is often the first response given to the question of what Fiča means to you. That a family Fiča is resurrected often elicits special approval and even tears from the parents and grandparents and among older generations in general. In a word, Fiča is a master family time bonder and is often quite explicitly referred to as a memento, whose primary function is to recall the happy family memories. So I'm quoting, "It reminds me of some of the most beautiful moments of my growing up," says one forum member. "Since I have it whenever I sit in it, I remember some event from the past and immediately feel better," says another one. "I think I was conceived in my dad's white Fiča." Parenthesis. Old folks always grin when I ask them. First, and then he enumerates. First vacation trip, parentheses, and almost all the others. First driving at 12. First girl at 16, in parentheses, nothing immoral. A bit of racing experience at 18, parentheses, crashed terribly. Escaping military service in brakeless Fiji on weekends. The love of my life in a pink Fiji. Almost always as a family member or a part of the decor, Fiji has been present and still is in my life. At the same time, Fiji has come to stand for a whole way of life in the former Yugoslavia. It has indeed become one of the major icons of Yugo nostalgia, just as Trabi has become perhaps the most potent single icon of what is called the nostalgia for the East Germany. Some have discovered a medicine for sorrow and nostalgia towards old Yugoslavia in this little bug-eyed machine, writes one of the four members. Another says, majority of us here has a Fichko, not because they have nothing better to drive at the moment, but out of pure love for the times that have passed, but not forever. To have or drive a Fichko is the same as possessing a part of the past, practically. A picture on the wall only reminds of past times, but a feature in front of your house is an excursion into memories. So feature works beautifully as a link between the family past and the past of the wider community. And its trajectory through the family can very handily serve to organize what is technically known as social frameworks of memory by providing a chronological marker. For instance, feature is often the first car acquired by the family. And then if you stay with the Zastava cars, which were the cheapest, then you would generally go and get Zastava 1300, which was a mean limousine. And then Zastava 101 later, and then perhaps in the end a Yugo that you are probably familiar with. And I would say that this was a canonical sequence. I don't have statistics, but this would be a kind of default sequence. And so each of the cars in that sequence would date a family history, but also an era. Now, there's nothing new about that. I mean, in this car culture, obviously cars are very good for dating or for transporting you immediately into a particular era, right? I'm just saying that feature did work like that in Yugoslavia. Now, another thing. Feature also figures prominently in the domain of what in the field of studies of socialism has been called the economy of favors. In short, the use of personal networks and informal contacts to obtain goods and services in short supply and to find a way around formal procedures. You remember the Trabi repairman's birthday and brought him homemade sausage, as a woman told Daphne Birdall, summarizing beautifully the classical economy of favor situation. So Feature participated in a similar network in its heyday. But now, more than 20 years after the last Feature rolled off the production line, a good Feature mechanic has become such a rarity as to verge on the mystical. Resurrecting a Feature nowadays involves you in a network of exchanges that more modern cars probably no longer do. It may involve, for instance, painstakingly warming yourself into good graces of an extremely grumpy old man who keeps around 100 features in his backyard, as has been documented on the forum. That's like the whole epic thing. If you're a feature lover and you're looking to buy an old feature, and then you find this guy has 100 features in his backyard, but he's a grumpy old man, it's very hard to talk to him. All right? So. Now, the quest for parts is never-ending, and masters of feature maintenance are hard to find. To be a feature owner today is to be forced to network in the old socialist way, and the fact that feature is inextricably enmeshed in such exchange of favors may be, in part, what endows it with soul, as many of its owners claim. Okay, so to recapitulate. Due to its unique position in the ex-Yugoslav car universe and in a canonical sequence of car ownership, feature acquired great potency as both an icon of Yugo nostalgia and a marker of familiar frameworks of memory. In its heyday, it tended to be enmeshed in a typical socialist economy of favors and was moreover ubiquitously and explicitly treated as a family member. Object of pride, it sounded a lullaby for sleepless babies, a mule that helped build the family dacha by hauling brick and mortar carload by carload, a hero of family vacations and epic trips to the seaside, a racing car, a way to pick up girls, even of backseat sex. It was cute and buggy, and when suitably souped up, a superb source of that particular kick one gets by leaving bigger and more expensive cars in the dust. Oops, what's that? In its role as a time binder for both families and the larger imagined communities, such as ex-Yugoslavia, feature embodies a gap. It usually spends years forgotten in a garage before being revived for the third generation. And when it is resurrected, it faces a world in which it cannot function as a mere practical vehicle, but always also as a relic, an icon, and the bearer of all kinds of ironies. So it just binds various pasts, familial or collective, and also indexes a gap or a loss. Now, let me explore something that I can call the figurative potential of feature. So just like Traubi, feature was an object of endless modifications and enhancements over and above the huge expenditure of time, effort, and what is technically called the blot capital required in order to merely keep it running. And it was just as other similar cars of Eastern Bloc provenance, a major locus of certain kind of practice that is in Yugoslav context best conveyed by the term budrenje, and the whole family of expressions derived from it. Okay, so this is one example. I gloss budrenje as a jury rigging or jerry building. And recently, a friend of mine told me of another one, and I'll find it. Bodgery. I don't know if you know. I didn't know about this word. Bodgery seems to refer to the same kind of thing. Okay, so let me just unpack this a little bit. Budžiti has a sense of augmentation in Serbia, not just rigging something up in a makeshift, slipshod, or improvised manner, but also in a way that makes the thing bigger, more awkward, or ungainly. It's the opposite of polishing. Polishing is what makes things better, but taking away the excess roughness. It's opposite of making something just right for the purpose with engineering precision. It's the opposite of that. It does have a Turkish loan word sound to it, and thus an aura of rough intimacy, vulgarity, and lower register, as words felt as Turkish often do. So there's this whole linguistic thing again about the Turkish loan words that constitute a register in Serbian and have this kind of sense of roughness. As a verb, it is often used with a few prefixes. Thus, zbudžiti, or an even more powerful skarabudžiti, has a stronger connotation of making something in a hurry and in a slipshod manner, just so it would hold for a minimum amount of time. Nabudžiti emphasizes the quality of augmentation. Prebudžiti has an additional sense of transforming something or something else. The noun budževina is used very often and is sometimes modified by the prefix kara, as in kara budževina. Kara is black in Turkish, but in the folk sense, it also serves to augment words it precedes in a particular rough manner. So kara budževina could then be rendered imperfectly as mega jury rigging, mega bad bodgery. Okay, this is an example of it. This is mega Baudry. The story I heard is that it's the Italian contingent in the KFOR, which is the peacekeepers in Kosovo, made this. Okay, so this is Kara Budževina. Now, there are basically two meanings to this word. One is to soup up the car by enhancing the engine in other parts. And there is an alternative word named frizirati, which is the same word that you use for hairstyling. And then a rigged car, a bugena machina, is a souped-up car. But unlike with frizirati, there is still a lingering sense of rough and improvised work. Yet the word in that use usually conveys a kind of approval and even admiration. The other sense is more negative and means jury-rigging or jerry-building, just that may or may not include enhancements and souping up. At that fichiad in Shabbat, I heard the same word used in these two senses, and often in a way that was undecidable. You could not decide what they meant, bad or good. The ambiguity of this expression could be fairly well described as this tension between what Levi-Strauss called the bricolage versus engineering. And Budženje actually hovers between bricolage and engineering, sometimes emphasizing one, sometimes emphasizing the other, but in most delightful and powerful uses is kind of suspended between the two. And this whole family of expressions really lends itself very easily to all kinds of metaphorical extensions. Its original home may be in the car or house rigging, and its locus might have now shifted to computers because Serbia is a notoriously rigged and piracy-ridden computing environment. But it's also very easily extended to the society as a whole. If Americans can joke that the whole universe is held by the duct tape, ex-Yugoslavs could be quite seriously depressed by a profound sense that their whole social universe is jury-rigged. One huge, ugly Kara Budževina. So I have a perfect example for that, someone who appeared on a radio show in 2006 who talks about it. And he defines Kara Budževina as a particularly serious, strong, and thoroughly performed Budževina, and claims that we live in a society that is one big Kara Budževina. And then just to give you a flavor of his rant or lament, says, it's the strange need to take all this garbage we keep in the basements of our reality and build it into the fine machinery we call society. It is this Kara Budževina, that is to say, we all see that this is a country where closets are made out of balconies, basements out of closets, rooms out of basements, living room out of kitchens, study out of a living room. We make public interest out of private matters, fathers of the nation out of populist ideas and demagoguery, dogma out of stupidity, a saint out of a racist, history out of leftovers, wisdom out of ignorance, victory out of defeat. In a word, we discard nothing. We are constantly jury-rigging something just so it could continue to serve some impossible and useless, and in any case, some wrong purpose. For instance, Milosevic, he was one of the crucial Budževinas of the 20th century and modern era, because this was a process where a bit of a communist, a bit of a dictator, a bit of a nationalist, well, we made a statesman out of all of this. So here is a society that is seen as a fine mechanism that has been jury-rigged over and over again to the point of hopelessness. Things are made to serve purposes that were not intended to them for them, and most importantly, all kinds of past debris is jury-built in the present, making it hopelessly confused, makeshift, crooked, improvised, shoddy, unreliable, irrational, ill-informed, and ungainly. Believe me, you know, there are a lot of laments that will just pile up these words. The author points out a kind of pride that his countrymen, in his opinion quite wrongly, having the resourcefulness and ingenuity that goes into all this rigging up of things. from cars and living spaces to politics and society in general. But he doesn't celebrate that resourcefulness, he laments it. And this genre of lament strongly projects and implies, even when not explicitly stating it, a kind of ideal state of things, an ordered universe, a society as a finely tuned machine, a world of systematicity, precision, and predictability, where everything has its right place, where nothing gets mixed up. Obviously, a utopia. Now, to return to the world of cars, the laments about the makeshift, crooked, improvised, shoddy, unreliable, et cetera, nature of the social world are relational and situational. Your world is such in comparison to other worlds. And here I would take another car that is a central figurative device, the jury-rigged Diana among the Belgrade Roma. The opposite of Kara Buđevina, that Serbian social world is seen to be, is usually taken to be some sort of idealized Europe, and within the Europe, the Northerners, the Swiss, the Swedes, and most commonly the Germans. And for Eastern Germany, the GDR as well, the most immediate Western other was the Wessi, the West German with his gleaming Mercedes. And so Germans are this major image of the rational, orderly life as opposed to the messiness of our life in Serbia. But there is also a sense there that we are not actually the extreme opposite of Germans, that we are actually somewhere in between. The other extreme often turns out to be the gypsies. So we are somewhere in between gypsies and Germans. Now, the gypsies are the true masters of mega jury rigging. And sure, you know, they tend to live in these dwellings that are often the epitome of a slipshod jury rigged makeshift architecture. But again, it's the car that better than anything else crystallizes the jury rigging as a way of life. So I'm going to show you a little clip from a wonderful documentary, 2003, called Pretty Diana, a Gypsy Recycling Saga, that shows how Roma refugees from Kosovo, who are now living in Belgrade, lovingly rebuild Dianas. These are the slightly larger successors to the famous Citroën Duševo, and sometimes equipping them with radios, cigarette lighters, even miniature TVs, and rigging them up to their carts. They collect cardboard, and that's what they need them for. So let's see if this will... Oh, okay. That's also jury rigging for you. So this is just about 1 minute clip. So they're buying these old Dianas, and they like them because it's very easy to remove the chassis. So it really, it's the best for their purposes, and you'll see approximately. I also have a clip with sound, so maybe I'll show it later. These people are absolute champions. Yes. They don't go kaboom, fortunately. Okay. This is actually Duševo. Diana is a slightly updated model. So this movie is a contemplation of jury rigging as a way of life. It is both fun and desolate, demeaning and empowering. The film is delightfully suspended among all these valences, and I think succeeds like no other gypsy movie made in Serbia at avoiding the pitfalls of condescension, romanticization, and exploitation. We sense that all this budging of Dianas is a trope for something. It's an allegory of something, but we're not sure of what. And this is what makes the film particularly delightful. Okay, so here's our trio, Trabi, Fiča, and Diana. Here's a Trabi, here's a Fiča. If Diana's in Roma hands, offer the extreme image of mega jury rigging for our contemplation. And if Traube, as described by Daphne, embodies the conundrums and ironies of German reunification as perhaps no other single thing, then what does Fichte do for those who have it at their disposal? Well, it's an icon of Yugo nostalgia with all its ambiguities. It's a mnemonic device for family history. It's a site for showing off male ego and resourcefulness. It's a filter for girls. I can talk more about that. A litmus test for sincerity and simplicity and adherence to true values. And not the least, it still manages to run and transport things and people from one place to another, quite literally. Thus, it's not only a vehicle as a metaphor, but it's a vehicle as simply a vehicle. I have written elsewhere about a widespread sense people had in Serbia in the 1990s and still have of their social reality being warped and moreover in a compounded way, warps on top of warps and so on. And actually it was kind of subconsciously using the Star Trek terminology. There's always some warp or some kind of anomaly that they encounter. So I used that. It was heavily criticized by my supervisor. Anyway, that's past history. So I have explored figurative devices people use in order to express this sense, such as dreamlike states. You know, people talk about how we live in this twilight, in this nightmare, zombie nightmare. That's like, you know, to connect it to your vampire course. Vampires also being neither here nor there, twilight creatures, dark creatures, and so on. I also talk about amorphous substances, etc. Now we can discern the same anguished sense of compounded, agglutinated, agglomerated warpings in this lament about the whole Serbian society being a karabuđevina. It was also so hopelessly rigged over and over, bodgered, that one ceases to see how it could be straightened and made right again. And here I learned Fichte appears as a device for ritual revitalization. So this is the last point I want to make. So as I told you, I managed to go to this Fichte yard in the Serbian city of Šabac, and I met this guy. Who drove us there, and this tall guy who somehow managed to sit in the front. And so we drove to Šabac. And then when I was, I made a little video, and when I was about to leave Belgrade, I met him to give him the video and the photos. So now, rather morose and grumpy, this guy is like morose and grumpy, he became quite animated when he started telling me how to restore the Fichte to its factory condition. And I already noticed that the Fichte fans, there are basically two categories. Of Fichte work and two aesthetics. One is the restoration to factory conditions, and the other is souping it up to be like a racing or sports car, where all kinds of extravagances are allowed or even admired. So this guy tells me getting it back to the factory condition is actually more difficult and more expensive than souping it up. And then he launched, transformed by his own enthusiasm, into a detailed technical account of how it is done. The shell should be inspected and all the rotten parts replaced. It should then be sanded thoroughly and painted by a professional in the special chamber that allows for constant heat and is kept absolutely dust-free. The process takes several coats, left to dry at 40 Celsius, and the result could be a shine that surpasses the original paint job. The engine should be completely taken apart and all the worn parts replaced. All the rubber parts have to be replaced, too, since they rot. And a very good electrician should replace all the original wiring since it was badly made to start with. And then the final test, he says almost enraptured, is to put a glass of water full to the brim on top of the engine, and if it is done right, the water should not spill when it's idling. Only then, he said, the Fichte has been restored to its factory condition in the right way. Then he stopped, and almost as he was surprised himself at his own revelation, he said, in fact, you bear it again. And he used the word that could mean only one thing, namely giving birth to a living being. Tiga zapravo rodiš. you actually give birth to it. By then, I was alerted to a kind of religious emotion in his account. And it took me a few days to figure it out. I had this nagging feeling that this account reminds me of something. He was a process that involved a decomposition, taking apart into pieces, putting things together again. The aim was nominally to restore a car to its factory condition, but in fact, the feature that was supposed to result from this painstaking, expensive, and long process, he says it takes about a year, was much better than anything that ever left the Zastava assembly lines in the past. So this was how an entity that was literally born again, and it was a feature that was more faithful to the original than the original, more shiny, more reliable, more itself. And then I also visited the Museum of Science and Technology, and I talked to a curator who was an engineer in charge of cars. And when I told him this story, he said this was nonsense. He says, engines like features that use the chains for transmission could never be so vibration-free to pass the full glass test. It was a fantasy, he said. But by then, I recalled what this account reminded me of. It reminded me of the typical, the classical shamanic initiation visions, where the new shaman is utterly dismembered and then put together again. What I think I witnessed was an incantation of a rejuvenation or restoration ritual, and like alchemists projecting their psychic transformations into the transformation of matter, so here it was the transformation of society from its hopelessly rigged up state to an imagined, pristine, unrigged previous state projected into and enacted through a car restoration project. Society as a whole cannot be manipulated, but a car can. Here is a healing ritual par excellence that we know so well from classical anthropological literature. Symbolic action achieves its ends through its capacity to create expressive iconic models with which the restructuring of a situation can take place, says Nancy Mann. Perhaps feature two could be seen as such an expressive iconic model upon which are performed certain operations of restructuring that at their proximal pole aim at restoring a dilapidated car to its factory condition, and its more distal pole enact a personal or even socio-political rejuvenation or revitalization. Ex-Yugoslavs who lovingly restore their features are often quite explicitly conscious that they are thereby enacting some sort of ritual return to the idealized past of a country that had some weight, some order, and some self-respect. This is precisely what a street vendor exclaimed when I excitedly pointed to a glass bottle feature he just laid down on a cardboard box. This is a moment I'm walking and there's this guy, he's putting up this cardboard box and he's putting it, this is a bottle supposedly for Slivovitz. It has this little thing here that you can use in the shape of feature, and I had to have it. I didn't ask for price. And the first thing he said was, yes, this was when we had a state. And I can go more into it, what this means. We had a state then, and feature is this icon of that state that we had. So, to conclude, restoring a feature is a labor of love. The feature fans I met this fall in Belgrade and in Shabbat never tired out of pointing this out. And one of the forum members has this motto. To love a feature is to know what is love. And those who don't know how to suffer don't know how to love. This is what my driver, this morose guy, kept repeating over and over again. It is not the money, it's the labor of love. It was as if a feature could not be properly restored to its factory condition without this crucial ingredient. Otherwise, it was implied the magic will not work and the feature will not be born again. So, this is it. This is basically, you know, just to say it again, the question that animated this presentation is how come the little cars or other vehicles can move us? Figuratively, I mean, they move us quite literally as well. And what is it that we can think through cars? More specifically, let's say, in the post-socialist world. But, you know, you guys belong to a car culture. And this is just an invitation to think more systematically about what kinds of things can you grasp or understand about larger things, about society, about your life, through these vehicles. So, thank you.
For a wonderful lecture, so I'm sure there are questions.
And
yes, I already have one.
Tsigan, since about when do you say Roma?
I'm not quite sure. It seems to be the sort of politically correct way of referring to.
Yeah, and when did that creep in?
Maybe even later than 80s. So I kind of vacillate. I mean, this opens up this whole interesting thing about this kind of symbolic value that gypsies or Roma have in Serbia, because you have a strong romanticization. You have movies like by Kusturica and by others that are about Roma and so on. So there's a whole load of things around them. And that's why I do sometimes refer to them as Tsigani, as gypsies, precisely because this may mean, this may be a term of abuse, but it also could be a highly romanticized one. So it's kind of in between. Yes?
So you describe the dream of a factory-conditioned feature as sort of parallel to the dream of the Eden of Serbia that could have been, that might have been. What about Croats, Slovenians?
Very good, actually.
How
yes.
do they see the Zastava factory or the feature?
Yes, this is a very good question. Okay, Slovenes love it. I know that. They figure very prominently on the forum. They're, you know, very much into it because now they are a part of the European Union, and you know they were even the what is it called last year. They can afford to be totally Yugo nostalgic to the hilt, so they love it. Bosnians love it. Bosnians might be the most nostalgic for Yugoslavia. So this is an icon of Yugo nostalgia rather than Serbian nostalgia. I would assume that Macedonians and Serbs are equally well represented. Croats, no. So I'm generalizing, but and I don't recall exactly, but some of the slogans put forward by the Tudjman's party actually featured and say, do you want to drive a feature? Meaning this is the abomination, this is the worst thing that can happen to you. Because, you know, this little car can be romanticized, but it was a small car that was like, you know, breaking down, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if given a chance, you would drive a Mercedes, right? So that was, cars were actually used metaphorically a lot. And so I'm not sure about ordinary citizens of Croatia. Some of them might actually have the same kind of nostalgia. But because Yugo nostalgia is a kind of prescribed in Croatia more than anywhere else, definitely you don't see their presence so much on the forum, if that's an indicator. Yes?
You talked earlier about during the socialist era, there was a sort of gray market surrounding the feature in terms of maintenance, which would seem to me like it was sort of a reaction against the communist economic sanctions. But now you say that there's sort of a nostalgia surrounding it and a reaching for the past in terms of maintaining these features in a similar manner. So it would seem that the features, the product itself, is an indicator sentiments of the population against socialism, so to speak. Can you think of other products that so closely parallel that?
Yes, and there is this whole industry, nostalgia industry, and you know, I'm not talking only about Serbs or ex-Yugoslavs, I would say that all kinds of other populations have that. Basically, in every major city in the States or in Canada where I am, you will run into these little delis that sell these food that is still produced in former Yugoslavia or the different parts. And this is your comfort food. So, yes, and these are very strong in eliciting the kind of Yugo nostalgia. Comfort food, right? You know, what you grew up on, et cetera, et cetera. And it's also kind of generational and so on. The reason why I like cars, because they are complex enough, right? I mean, you know, there's this chocolate banana that you eat, and, you know, it brings up memories. Cars are very complex. There is this whole thing that you need to do as part of maintenance, which then involves you in the social relations with car mechanics, et cetera, et cetera, which brings up this whole way of socializing that could be romanticized. People will complain about it during socialism, saying, like, I cannot do anything straightforward. I cannot have stuff accomplished easily and efficiently. I always have to go through these networks, which means I have to kind of, not necessarily bribe, but kind of, you know, save that sausage for the Trabi mechanic, right? Now, one way of looking at that is, but this is more humane. We are building human relationship. This is where the soul comes in. There is whole literature behind this. Or you can be really resentful about the whole thing. And as you know, nostalgia is this kind of rosy way of looking at your past. So even now, when you're trying to find a mechanic and trying to find a spare part, you might be reflecting at the good old days when not everything was done through money, right? But was done through cultivating people, through hanging out with this kind of mechanic and so on and so forth. So once you go into it, it's actually quite complex. It usually has at least two valences of, like, life was hard, we had to circumvent the system and all the shortages. On the other hand, this build up some kind of sociality. Thank you for this question. This gave me an opportunity to go into the soulfulness of things. Yes?
In this room last year, we had a lecture on homemade vodka. Mm-hmm. And they showed us a picture of a glass bottle in the shape of a Kalashnikov machine. Very reminiscent of the picture you showed us here.
We had this conversation about the respective drinking cultures in Russia. Yugoslavia being a southern place where you have to sip yours a little bit and enjoy it rather than just do it. On the other hand, vodka drinking is a science in Russia. I mean, you know, they measure it in 100 grams. I mean, that's precision for you. It's like 100 gram vodka. Yes?
You were saying about the question in East Germany of the other being the West Germans with their Mercedes. I think that was probably one reason why West Germans were not allowed to drive their own cars anywhere in East Germany except East Berlin. Was one of those reasons, because they felt it would demoralize the population. You know, people, West Germans were driving around in the country roads with their Benzes. Yeah. Except for Berlin.
Yeah, I don't know. It makes sense, but. On the other hand, it would also make sense to do the opposite, to parade your Mercedes, to show them, you know, the power of capitalism, right, and so on. And cars are such a good, you know, emblem of that. Yes?
Quick question
before
you mentioned
it serving
as a screamer for girls or women.
Oh, yeah, okay. I will actually read you just. So this is something that appeared on the forum, right? So Feature is not a flashy car. And we're talking, you know, people nowadays in 2006 or 2007, there are plenty of really good cars on the streets of Belgrade. God knows who has the money. But actually, it started even, like, with decent little cars from Europe. So Feature is definitely not something that you... is like for you know, wooing girls generally. So let me see. Basically, the idea was this. There was this whole discussion on the forum that a feature is a filter for girls. Namely, if they're the right kind of girl, they would love it. They would say, oh, you are driving a feature. If they're wrong kind of girl, they will say, what? Now, there is this whole, okay. You know, as you can imagine, this is like wild capitalism and so on and so forth. And, you know, plus the country was in war, so there is, you know, criminals and warlords and so on and so forth. They are the rich ones. And so there is this category called sponsorusha, which means sponsored girl, a recognized category of a woman who will actually, you know, basically allow herself to be abused even in public in exchange for a kind of high style of living, right? Now, people who drive features, sometimes they have money to buy something better, but very often they are actually relatively poor people. And so they're like, okay, if the girl doesn't like my feature, she must be a sponsorusha, I don't want to associate with, and you know, she's a whore, et cetera, you can imagine, right? But it's a real filter, because if she likes it, then she likes you in a kind of sincere way, right? And so it's a general filter for people as well, how they react to you driving around with the feature, right? Because if they show emotion, this means that they're your kind of people who appreciate, you know, loving and sincerity and probably you go nostalgic and so on and so forth. In that sense, it's a filter.
I was going to say, when and if Cuba ever opens up, I think that would be a prime country for your type of research to go on.
Yes.
Because of the fact, you know, they have the old U.S. cars from the 50s, and they also have plenty of Russian cars that are still in service, although they don't like the Russians anymore. So, I mean, that would be a prime place to look at old cars.
I have to apply for a grant and do it. You're right, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So, on the back of that, then, just thinking, cross-culturally, as it were. I mean, I'm sure we can all think of, you know, equivalent cars to some degree in other places. How might you approach the more general question of the car playing into so many social cultural contexts in what seem to be analogous ways? Do you yet have a sense of how you might begin to talk about that rather more complicated, even theoretical approach to what the car is?
This is actually just a start for me. So you got a sense of the genesis of this project. So it started as a kind of comparison to traveling, right? And then it's an exploration of like, well, what kinds of things can we see through cars? And one of them was, for instance, how they function in the family history. Now, as far as I know, in Eastern Germany, you didn't have the kind of variety in cars, nor was there a sense in which Trabi will kind of be updated. It was the same Trabi for 20 or 30 years. And so my kind of one of the comparative ideas I had was, okay, what does it take for a car to function well in what is technically known as social frameworks of memory? And obviously it works beautifully in this country where you know, really cars, you know, you immediately locate them in a particular era, because there is this whole fashion and change and so on and so forth. It's kind of built into the system. So that's one idea that I had of some kind of comparison. I would need to know much more about the car culture in the States, and that would be the next step. This was just laying out of some of the ways to, in general, go about it. And for this next paper, I'm going to go much more into how vehicles work as metaphors. And I've done some thinking about why, you know, they are. They're actually vessels. They're ambulatory vessels. So they are like shells and exoskeletons and wombs and so on and so forth. I mean, that's another thing where you can go in greater detail. And then there's this whole culture of repair. And I talked to some people. Then, you know, there is a branch of the Harley-Davidson and motorcycles and the whole incredible culture that's built around that. And then there is the transportation, like transport into the past of how these things can really kind of are time machines. So I was even alerted to watch old episode of Doctor Who because of all the features actually. What is it? TARDIS, yeah. Anyway, so I think that there are many possible venues, but I only just started now thinking about it. Yes?
In Western Europe and the United States, nostalgia gets museumized, institutionalized. So old factories become a museum. And there are generally two reasons for nostalgia. If things are worse, we think of the Eden that was better. And if things are better, we think of all the terrible things we've gone through. So, I mean, either way, it works. Has Yugoslavia or Serbia reached that stage where it can be institutionalized, museumized, as Western Europe does? I mean, certainly in Germany, they already museumized nostalgia.
Oh, yes. To much lesser extent. First of all, I would argue that Serbia is really had this kind of very delayed transition. You know, transition is kind of over elsewhere, but because of the wars, it's only now kind of going through it. So things are too raw, I think, still. Now, there is a museum, a car museum in Belgrade. It just happens that there is a rich guy who collected cars and found a place to exhibit them. And yes, I went there, but it's not well known. It's small. It's not a kind of officially done thing. And there was a museum of technology, which is, I mean, one day I have to go and film it. It's amazing. It's closed. It's in a horribly dilapidated condition. So it does exist, a museum of technology. They have all kinds of things. It's not open. So this shows you the kind of neglect. And therefore, I would say it's not yet the moment for that kind of museification. I guess when it comes, it will probably be a sign that the times are better and more kind of settled.
Cadillac on the island of Brioni is like a big deal, and you can have a ride, you know, in it. And you know, Croats have created out of Brioni Island kind of a museum of you know, Tito and Tito's past and Tito's history. So it's kind of interesting that car features prominently. You can actually like pay extra to have a ride on Tito's Cadillac.
And Tito is a good, I mean, you know, what better icon of this whole era is than Tito? The relationship to Tito will be different in different ex-Yugoslav republics. It's only very tentatively that, you know, Tito is being museumified now in Serbia. There was a recent exhibition that is, I think, still open in Belgrade about all the gifts that ordinary citizens of Yugoslavia gave to Tito. It's just kind of a little sad, a little endearing, a little funny kind of collection, but it's only now beginning. So I think it tells you something about how raw the things still are. Not yet safe to just indulge in museification of these things.
Okay, well, if there are no more questions, thank you, Marco, very much.
Thank you.